Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
The other rights remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. You understand your rights.
And the wolf is at your door. You're running over, that's for sure. He already knows all about you. Cut you down.
Warning, this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature and should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And as always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. And today, I want to tell a Halloween story, y'all. Well, it ties to Halloween a lot, mainly. And it's old cop story, but it's, I think you'll find it fascinating. But then I'm going to tell you the truth about it, okay? And once again, I'm recording from Wisconsin. I've been up here hunting with the Olopa family, who unfortunately has a hero son who was killed, I think, 3 days after. I may have that wrong, but 3 days after he got his driver's license. And he looked at his mom when he was getting his driver's license and said, "Hey, I want to become an organ donor." And so he signed up. And then 3 days later, he was killed. And his organs, Lopa helped him out. And one of his organs went to another young man who's up here in Wisconsin also hung with us, and he actually got the kidney from the deceased hero. So it's pretty special, y'all, to have the mom and the brother of the hero who died and his organs went to whomever, but that one of the organs went to the other young man who is here hunting with his mom, so that they're all together. And one of the deals on them coming up was I promised I'd come up and help guide them on the hunt and cook for them and stuff like that. But all these years I've been talking about Lopa and the victims that I've seen and the families that Lopez worked with, et cetera. And the reason I got involved is because they save lives every day. To be with these people in the same room and sit in a deer stand with them, et cetera, really, really, really touching. I just tell you this, three hunts I made with the young man who received the kidney, and I think he's like 22 or 23 now, and he got it 6 years ago. He wouldn't be able to hunt with me, y'all. But so I guess I'll start this one off with Lopa instead of ending with Lopa. It means a lot. And, you know, you don't have to be a lifer from Louisiana. You could be from Missouri. And just go to lopa.org and sign up to be an organ donor. It takes a couple minutes. And the chances that you ever get, you know, you'll be a hero in my eyes anyway. And the chance for them to ever do what they do with you after you're basically deceased or very slim. But it helps. And I'm an organ donor, and I keep spreading the word because of moments like this. And it's pretty touching. And I haven't shared a lot about it on social media and stuff because it's kind of a private thing with these families that are together, and we're doing these things together. So they truly save lives, people. So enough of that. Let's get to the story. All right. I'm going to take you back to, I was first in uniform patrol with Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office. And I worked the east side of the parish because I've told y'all many times, Livingston Parish was divided in half geographically for law enforcement reasons. You had the east side and the west side. And the west side of the parish was more populated, still is today. That's where the biggest cities, Walker and Denham Springs and all that are. And then the east side is more rural with the small towns, which most of them aren't so small anymore now. But I guess it's been 30 years or however long it's been. But I started out on the east side in uniform patrol. And, you know, I didn't know really the towns and the roads, and we didn't have GPSs, and we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have computers in our cars and cameras in the cars. I'm talking about our units. I had a map book. The dispatch would call and say 259-361. We have a 103D in Springfield at, you know, such and such on McCarroll Road. So I had to get out this orange map book and look up where McCarroll Road was. And I had to look it up in an index, you know, in the front. I don't think anybody reads books anymore, but I had to look it up in the index and then turn to the page where it was. And it would give me one page of where McCarroll Road was. And then you had to follow it out and reference pages of how to get to McCarroll Road and all that. It's freaking crazy how far technology has come and been advanced. But the small towns, look, when you work the east side, you're supposed to have three per shift back then. And now they probably have 30 or more. But back then, on the good nights, you're supposed to have three. And the west side being more populated, they had more calls. And if you had three, chances were one of you were getting pulled to go catch calls on the west side. 911 calls, you know, they all got to be answered. Or maybe a manhunt, whatever. So most of the time, it was just two of them. And I told you about John T. Wilkerson, my old ride or die partner, that he and I went to the LSU Academy together. And then he actually was assistant chief for the town of Springfield before he transferred to the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office. Now, we were friends by this time. We'd been to the academy again and everything else. And I was working at Southeastern University Police Department, and I transferred over, and they put John T. and I together on the same shift, which was, you know, really cool. But we were on the east side of the parish. But back to the small towns, that was your backup. You know, nine times out of 10, that's a huge geographical area to cover for two people. And, you know, Sugar Turner's shed, and you got it in a foot pursuit or, you know, shootout, whatever it may be. or you just need a backup on a call, the town guys were, meaning the police officers for the Livingston Police Department or the Albany Police Department, like my dear friend Leon Winstead, who's now deceased, died right after COVID, but I give the eulogy at his, not only did I give the eulogy at his funeral, but I was also the best man in his wedding with Miss Flo, who's a real sweetheart. But that was your backup. The Killian Police Department might have had one person on. Springfield would have one on. Albany would have one on. Most of them are part-timers. Like Leon, he didn't have to do it. He did it because he loved the job. And who else? The French Settlement Police Department. That was it. You didn't have anybody else. And wherever you're at, they would send, you know, most of the time those guys weren't busy. They were like writing tickets and stuff. And then they would come and roll and back you up. Well, sometimes it worked the other way. Sometimes the town guys sugar turned to shit and they needed backup and we were able to back them up. Now, why am I telling this story? We would also hang out with the town cops that, you know, when it was slow, wouldn't have anything to do. We'd pull like in the bank parking lot. I'm giving an example. In Springfield late at night and, you know, there was nothing going on then. There were no fast food restaurants or anything like that. And we'd pull up in the bank parking lot and we'd get out. And this, I probably shouldn't tell a story. I think I have that before. We would have quick draw contests. Terry Sanchez was one of them that worked there then. He works for Hammond PD now. I think he's a detective. But we would line up in the parking lot and, you know, make our weapons safe, meaning unload them, and we'd check each other's weapons, make sure they're unloaded, and then we'd have a quick draw contest. We'd stand there like wide open and see who could draw their weapon the fastest. You know, pointing away, we'd be in a line and draw and see who could draw the weapon the fastest. But you just kill time together, and so you become very close. You work together all the time. And I keep going back to Springfield in this story for a reason, and this is a Halloween edition, y'all. I don't remember exactly what happened the first time. I know we used to run between like what they call the horseshoe in Springfield and another part of Springfield that there were two areas where narcotics were sold. Best people in the world live down there. Some of the shittiest people in the world live down there. But you catch people coming out of these neighborhoods late, especially late at night, and they would just bought dope and would go down there and harass the dope dealers and basically just hunt them in, harass the dope dealers, go down there and get in the foot pursuits and vehicle pursuits. And this is when the call volume was down and we were kind of bored and we were just having our own fun. It really was fun. So many times now, I wish I could go back all those years and put on a uniform again and climb in that old blue and white MARC unit and just go 10-8. Just go on duty, in service, and have some fucking fun. But life happens, right? So back to it. Springfield is on the far eastern side of Tangipahoa Parish. Actually, there's a bridge that you cross over right outside the town of Springfield. There is a red light in Springfield. It's a three-way. And if you go due east, you cross into Tangipahoa Parish. But the bank, and if you come into Livingston Parish, the bank was right there on the right. And then you would take a right on, it's 22. Oh, I think it's Highway 42. 22 meets 42 there. And you take the right, and then it's Main Street, in Springfield. You have the bank, and then it's Main Street, and right across the street from the bank is the police department, Springfield PD. And if you keep going west on 42, there's a Springfield Cemetery on your right, and then you're pretty much out of the city limits after that. But we were down there. It was Halloween time. I'll never forget that because we always had to, like, you know, earlier in the evenings when you go 10-8, you'd have to have your units with the lights on in neighborhoods for trick-or-treaters and shit like that. But I forget what night of the week it was. It was later on in the night, and I was close to Springfield, and I believe it was Terry Sanchez that was 10-8, and I heard him say 259 or SP3 to 259, meaning Springfield 3. That was his unit number. 259 being dispatch. He said, "I'm going to be out at Springfield Cemetery." And I was close. I was actually coming into Springfield. I saw him turn into the cemetery. Well, there were some cars parked there. Now, Springfield is an old-ass town. Old small community. I think mid-1800s, but definitely before the Civil War. They call it, the Village of Springfield. But anyway, I'm coming in.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts to spark joy, wonder, delight, and that's exactly what I want it feeling. Hey, y'all, I ordered a super cool piece. It's a candle with a sculpture of LSU Tiger Stadium on top of it. And each officially licensed laser-cut wooden replica features up to 4 layers of detail, creating a bird's-eye view of a specific football field, seating section, and more. And every label includes your stadium's name, the team's logo, and school location. And it has a coconut, soy, vegan wax infused with sandalwood smell that creates tailgates and touchdown scent profile, reminiscent of game day. It's invigorating like fresh-cut grass and nostalgic like smoke from a pre-game grill. In common, like the crisp autumn air of a new semester on campus. Y'all, I love it. I have it at the base of my TV, and I'm ready to watch the Tigers play on Saturday night, right? Uncommon Goods. Look, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches. So shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts you can personalize. From holiday hosts and hostess gifts to the coolest finds for kids to hits for everyone from the book lovers to diehard sports fans, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selection you can just find anywhere. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. So to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/RLRC. That's uncommongoods.com/RLRC for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Hey, y'all. You want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with the subject? Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to become curious and empowers them to choose how to learn. Look, we homeschool our son. No doubt about it. He's more of a visual learner, and we use IXL, and Cindy teaches him, and there are so many different benefits to the program. It adapts to exactly what he needs in different areas. So IXL is the perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum. IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational games, lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving. Everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you are covering. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead like our son, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. Kids love IXL's positive feedback awards and educational games. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. And don't forget, Real Life Real Crime listeners get 20% off. Y'all, we really do use this product, and it's been a godsend.
I see him pull up behind some vehicles at the cemetery. And this is an old cemetery. It's a beautiful spot. Yeah, they have a brass cannon, like a Civil War cannon or something in it. And they had just some old graves all the way up to the modern graves, big oak trees. It's kind of hills on both sides and all that. I mean, and I passed 1,000 times on duty, but I'd never been in there. And so Terry pulls in, I pulled in and get out. So what you got? And he said, I got these people in the cemetery. And I said, what's up with that? And I'm, what the hell are they doing in the cemetery on Halloween night? He said, bro, just come on with me. He said, I promise you they're going to be 966, which means holding narcotics. I'm like, okay, whatever. So we walk in and no lights on. We walk in on foot. You know, up on the hill on the right, you see lights around a grave, right? And get up there, and there's literally like 15 people around this grave. They got candles lit and they're chanting and shit. And I'm thinking, what the fuck? You know, there's some Halloween shit here, right? They're holding a seance or some shit. But we walk up on them, and Terry told me, he said, don't turn on your flashlight till we get up on them. And we walk up on them, and I mean, they're in a circle and they're chanting, and Terry turned on his light and turned my light. And he said, Springfield Police Department. I said, Sheriff's Office. Look, immediately jackrabbits. These motherfuckers scatter like cockroaches when the lights come on. Right. And I'm like, fuck, foot pursuit. And I tackled some guy. He didn't get far. And Terry grabbed another one. Well, shit, we had their cars blocked in. It wasn't like they could leave. They had pulled in. It's like a one pull in driveway, and we had them blocked in. So we had put a couple of them in cuffs, and a couple of them had stayed by this grave where the candles were. And Terry's, we brought them up the hill, and he said, what are y'all doing here? And they said, well, we're here because of the grave of Michael Brown. And I didn't know anything about it at the time. Y'all wasn't from Livingston Parish. And he said, This is the cemetery's closed. There's signs, and you know you're trespassing. And look, he starts made everybody stand still, and we went around. We're pat frisking people, and one dude, I get up on him from behind, who's one of the ones who had run, and I said, look, do you have anything on you? I need to pat frisk you for officer safety. This is before the interrogation began. And after we told him it was trespassing, and he said, no. And I'm patting him down. And I said, you don't mind if I pat you down? You don't have any tanks or rocket launchers or knives or anything that's going to stick me. The reason why you're in the cemetery in the middle of the night, around midnight, and you don't have who you're dealing with, before you talk to a large group of people, you want to make sure you're safe. No one has any firearms, et cetera. Well, when I'm patting him down, I feel what I know, and this is exactly how I wrote it in my report. I feel what I believe to be a plastic bag containing narcotics in this dude's blue jeans pants pocket. And I said, what's this? And he says, nothing. And I said, well, then you don't mind if I take it out? And of course, he did mind. But what if he said no, and I would arrest him or whatever for trespass, and got to search him incidental to arrest. And I took it out, and it was a bag of weed. No big deal, right, in the grand scheme of things, even 30 years ago, however long ago it was, the maybe 25 years ago, I don't remember, but I took out a bag of weed. So I placed him in cuffs he said, this is mine just for my use. And I said, I get that, whatever. So we go around and I think a couple of them had, weed and some shit like that. And we just wrote him tickets, or Terry wrote him tickets because I didn't write tickets. And he sees the weed, and I gave it to him. It's his jurisdiction. And the candles and what, after everything had settled down, we processed them all. I'm talking about at the gravesite. And Terry was like, wrote his tickets and all that. And so I'm talking to him like, what's the deal? I mean, why are y'all here? And they said, you don't know the story of Michael Brown? And this is Halloween, and this is one of the most haunted places in Louisiana. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And Terry was busy, but he would end up telling me everything later on. And this girl says, this is sacred ground. This boy got murdered. And after he was murdered, they buried him, and it was a whodunit. And nobody knew who did it. And then within one night, this drawing came up on the back of his tombstone, and the drawing shows him, doing what he was doing. He was hunting. He was a big hunter, y'all. Michael Brown was. And, he was a teenager. He was 15 years old when he got killed. And she said they buried him. And like 2 days later, after the tombstone was put up, you know, because it takes them a moment to order those, right? It's not like you get buried and you have your tombstone immediately. But she said after the tombstone was put up, two nights later, the drawing that Michael Brown did himself magically appeared on this tombstone. I said, what the fuck? She said, yeah. And it shows that he was hunting and he got killed. Oh, let me tell you how he got killed. He was, I think he was 15 years old, if I remember correctly. And he was from Holden, Louisiana, which is another small town on that east side of the parish. And in between Springfield or in between Albany and Livingston, the town of, he said he got run over, and it was a whodunit, and they buried him, and they put up his tombstone, and then magically this drawing appears of him hunting. Is it like a childlike drawing, y'all? And I'll post it. It was really kind of freaky. That said, it shows him hunting and doing all this stuff. It looks like a kid's drawing, like, you know, a kid drew this. I mean, a younger kid than a 15-year-old. It's just like stick people and shit. It said, and it told who, it shows how he died, and it told who it was that hit him, who ran over him. And it was unsolved until this showed up. And then the cops used this information once they found out people were coming out here and what was on the tombstone. They used the information to go question the guy who ran over him, and the guy confessed. I was like, what the fuck? And I look at Terry, and he's like shaking his head. And I said, so why didn't y'all come out here? Why? She said, because it's haunted. His spirit came from the dead, and he solved his own crime. And let me see if I can find an article on it while we're talking. They'd type it in on the phone. They said, you know, he did. I'm like, fuck, that's kind of freaky, right? And I was thinking to myself, and it's Halloween night, and we're in the middle of the cemetery, and it's dark as fuck, and the people, they're adamant about this. And there's candles burning and all this stuff. And I shine my light on the back of the tombstone. Look, I saw all the drawings. I mean, and I'll post them for you. They're there, and there's no doubt about that. But then, you know, Terry ends up writing all his tickets, and you know, we basically let everybody go. And he told him, don't ever come back, blah, 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 blah. So we leave, and Terry said, man, this is all bullshit. And he said, but this is what the story is. And he said the same thing the lady had said. He said, bruh, ever since I've been with Springfield, every Halloween or every time around Halloween, the people show up at this boy's grave because of the story. And they do, you know, he said, we got witches that show up. We got just ghost hunters that show up and all shit. He said, it's just an ongoing thing. Well, we got called off on something else that time. And, anyway, every time I'd pass by the cemetery at nighttime, I would look to see if there were any cars parked there. And over the years, there were. Now, John T., remember my road buddy I told you about, he used to be assistant chief for Springfield. And one day I asked him about it. He said, yeah, that's some freaky shit, man. And he said, but the family says it's not true. But he said, there's no denying what's on that boy's grave. Now, I found an article. Hold on. Let me read you this article, or at least part of it, and I'll tell you what I know about it as I go along. It says, this is from September 14, 2003. I would have been in detectives by that time. So this is after all my interactions. And look, I had a shit ton. Fuck, one time we pulled up, there was a tour bus, a fucking rented tour bus full of people that were there after hours. Like a ghost tour thing. I'll never forget that. And we wrote all kinds of, or they wrote all kinds of tickets. I didn't write tickets. But this was an ongoing thing. People in there, but most of the time they were doing dope and, you know, whatever, praying or seancing or whatever the hell it is people do around a haunted site or investigating or whatever. Let me read you this article. It says, Mayor debunks myth. All right. September 14, 2003 says ghost stories about Michael Brown's grave were already going strong when Charlie Martin was elected mayor of Springfield in 1988, just 5 years after the 15-year-old Holden boy died in a car accident north of Hammond. All right, I'm going to interject. Charlie Martin was the mayor the whole time that I was there. Oh, also my mentor, Kearney Foster, that I talk about over the years, Chief Kearney Foster, is just freaking absolutely responsible for where I am today. He lived just on the other side of Springfield, and he was really good friends with Charlie Martin. And I'm sorry, y'all can hear the dogs barking. Somebody must be here. The only dealings I had, well, you just have to put over it. I apologize that how unprofessional, but that's upstairs and I'm in the basement. So Charlie Martin was a lifelong resident of Springfield. And I'm sorry, y'all. And I did arrest somebody. I got in a fist fight in a firework parking lot in Springfield sometime around the 4th of July. And I ended up arresting the guy. He was like parked in a handicapped parking spot or something. And somebody complained about it. And that was one of my pet peeves. If you parked in a handicapped parking spot, I was going to fuck with you. But so I ended up, the guy resisted. And I ended up taking him to jail, went and charged him some good stuff. And they dropped it down to the mayor's court, which if you get arrested, like all the tickets they wrote, you go to mayor's court, and that's how Springfield PD made their money. And Charlie Martin, you know, whatever, he's a good dude, and he was an older guy like I am now. But he'd been there forever. So let's go back to it. So the article says variations and embellishments attached to the story over the years, but the gist of it was always this. Michael Brown was walking home along a back road after a day of hunting when he was killed by a hit and run driver. When his body was discovered, there were no clues, and his death would have remained unsolved if Michael's spirit hadn't intervened. Shortly after his headstone was erected, some stories say that it was later the same day, Michael's mother returned to his grave in Springfield Cemetery and found a drawing had been carved on the back of the headstone. It depicted the accident and even named the driver. Check that out. Wilkerson, now no relation to John T. Y'all, that my roadie, John T. Wilkerson, but it says Wilkerson and his passengers. All right, this is on the drawing. And it says, based on those clues, police confronted Wilkerson and he confessed. The tale had all the right elements for a good ghost story, and local teens and college students have been passing it along for years and challenging each other to spend time in the graveyard. The story spread widely and can be found on the internet at www.freakopedia.com as investigated and reported by Rex Z, who claims to be a new resident of Springfield, and some say it was on Unsolved Mysteries at one point. Interrupt again. I did hear that a lot of the years, like Unsolved Mysteries came out and did a whole TV special on how this drawing magically appeared and named it. It's a kid's drawing and named the killer, and that the case was unsolved, but that's bullshit. I can tell you that right now, because I tried to look it up even back in the day, one day around Halloween when it was on my mind, and I couldn't find anything on Unsolved Mysteries. All right, but back to it.
Hey, y'all, let me tell you about Mochi. Mochi is a telehealth platform that connects patients seeking medication-based weight loss treatment with board-certified doctors and dietitians to help them determine the best treatment options to accomplish that goal. Mochi's program is completely virtual, meaning you can access their services anywhere in the United States and you will be meeting with their team online. You deserve doctors that listen. Mochi is dedicated to providing holistic, patient-centered care that prioritizes overall well-being with the goal of transforming how weight management is approached. Mochi Health takes a holistic approach to weight loss that includes visit with board-certified doctors, nutrition consultations, and medications delivered to your door. Science-backed medications including GLP-1s like Ozempic and generic compound versions, affordable and accessible, regardless of insurance coverage. With Mochi, their dietitians work hand-in-hand with your medication to create personalized nutrition plans that fit your lifestyle. Reach your weight loss goals with science-backed, FDA-approved GLP-1 medications and support from real doctors and guidance from registered dietitians, and help with making easy and sustainable changes to achieve results. Y'all have seen this. My wife has done it. My brother-in-law has done it. One of my best friends is doing it, and it really is an amazing process that works. So get started at joinmochi.com and use code RLRC to receive $40 off. That's joinmochi.com and use code RLRC to receive $40 off, and let Mochi help change your life. Hey, y'all, let me tell you about Gobble. All Gobble meal kits are pre-prepped. That means less work for you and less waste in your kitchen. Their meal kits include everything you need so you can save time at the store or just skip that trip entirely. I got the box in and I had three different meals. I had a Kung Pao chicken, crispy fish tacos, and a beef bourguignon, however you say it. But let me tell you about the classic beef bourguignon. Look, it came with beef pot roast and a beef broth concentrate, red wine demi-glace, cremini mushrooms, cipollone onions, mashed potatoes, baby carrots, and rosemary thyme butter. It was so easy to make. Literally like 15 minutes it took Cindy. And let me tell you something, all the dishes were fire, but this thing was like a taste explosion in my mouth. It's just unreal. We've got to spend more time together and more time doing the things we love because everything came in this one single box right to my door. So see what a difference Gobble will make for your household. Right now, they're offering my listeners a fantastic limited time deal. You get $120 off across four boxes, plus free shipping and free cookies. And let me tell you, those cookies, I ate one that was sin-baked, and it was delicious. Go to gobble.com/real life. That's GOBBLE.com/real life for $120 off your first 4 boxes. This offer is not available on the home site, so don't miss out. This is genius. It's taste explosions in your mouth like you never had.
So, okay, so some say it was on Unsolved Mysteries at one point, but no one can name the date, and the producers for Unsolved Mysteries say it isn't so. But Mayor Martin laughed at the spooky going-ons, as did other adults with good sense, and he would have considered them harmless fun were it not for the trash left behind by party, thrill-seeking candle wax on the headstone, wrappers from snacks and fast foods, crushed beer cans, and dozens of cigarette butts in traces that became increasingly hard to ignore. Now, you know, fuck, if you're going to go to a cemetery, be fucking respectful, right? I mean, that's where people go to visit their loved ones. I don't go to cemeteries myself, and not even for my own family, but this is not something I do. I believe if you're gone, you're gone. But a lot of people get peace and solace from that, right? So basically, these people were going out there and throwing a party on this boy's grave. So back to it. In 1997, about 2 years after his own son had died, Martin and his wife were visiting his son's grave when they were approached by Mary Anthony, who's Michael Brown's sister. Vandals had knocked over her brother's headstone, and she needed help lifting it back on the coping, or however you say it. The Martins asked her if there was any truth to the stories. That's Mr. Charlie Martin and his wife. And she said they were completely false. And she'd been telling people that for years when she encountered the Martins at Michael's grave. She said, but the people didn't seem to believe her. Mayor Martin added his voice to the denials then, but got no better results. The visitors kept coming, wearing a path through the grass of the cemetery and desecrating not only Michael's grave, but also others nearby. After police made a few drug busts there, and that would be yours truly, because I did several over the years, aldermen considered locking the gates, but instead passed an ordinance against loitering in the cemetery between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. Since then, they issue 15 to 20 citations a month, y'all. That's year round. So this is after, you know, my time. I guess they just pretty much catch them, one every 2 days, people in the cemetery. Anyway, so they issue 15 to 20 citations a month, Martin said. But the night visitors have kept coming, and legal visitors during the daytime as well. I didn't think about that. Reporters approached Martin several times over the years, but he had forgotten Anthony's name and never pursued it until he was contacted this year. And with a little research, he discovered that Gertrude Wilkerson, Michael Brown's mother, had ordered his headstone from Louisiana Memorials. He contacted her and suggested a meeting with local media to debunk the myth. She was reluctant at first, fearing that if you put a lot of light on something that's nonsense, it just gets worse. But she came, and Mary Anthony came with her. I moved out to Los Angeles in 1987, Wilkerson said, and before I left, we found candles and candy and such, but I never realized it was such an issue. I remember thinking that Michael loved people and found good in everybody, so he was probably sitting up there having a ball. But then, when Wilkerson returned to Holden in 1996, she discovered that her daughters, Anthony and Pamela, that's kind of a strange name, a girl, Anthony and Pamela Hoover had been shielding her from the worst of it. I went 4 or 5 times a year. And 2 out of 3 times I would go, I would find people there, Anthony said. And I always found litter. I would put angels on the coping and they would be broken. I had to buy about 80 pounds of potting soil a year to fill it in. I guess, y'all, that is because they trample the grave so much. With evident contempt for the people who have been desecrating her son's grave, Worksis said, "I'll probably never stoop so low as to let them bother me. I don't believe in ghosts or goblins or anything. This is just so far-fetched because everything about his death was on TV, so there's no hidden secret. They can pull the accident report and they meet. I don't know how this could start. There might be someone, God forbid, that the person I'm thinking of started this to get attention. But whoever did this, I forgive them." And the only truth to the story is that the headstone was originally put in place with the drawing on the back. But that only happened because of a mix-up. Louisiana Memorials apologized and picked it up and added the drawing as ordered. So evidently, y'all, they did set it up, but without the drawing on the back, and then they fixed it. Leslie Monvez, the business owner, remembers it well. When contacted about it at the main location of Walker, and y'all, that's a town in Livingston Parish, he was glad to set the record straight. "They gave me a drawing on a brown paper bag," he said. "I traced onto the mask of the stone, cut it out, and blasted it just like I always do. When I heard the stories, I told people the truth, but I didn't know what else to do about it. One of my men even ran into a tour bus over there while he was setting up a monument. He told them the true story, but they didn't believe him." So evidently somebody was making some cheddar, y'all, off running tour buses. I ran into a tour bus there too. Article continues. "Despite persistent denials by everyone in a position to know the truth, the people keep coming, and Wilkerson has little hope that her statement to the media will change things. Mary Anthony took a lot of abuse from this, and it left her really scarred," Wilkerson said. "I'm doing this for some kind of closure on it. Whether this does it or not, it's the truth." And that's an article. Let me see if I can find another one real quick. Pretty crazy, though. Let's see what this one says. This one says, "The haunted Dirty South is in Springfield. Springfield Cemetery. The Civil War era graveyard is located inside the town of Springfield, Louisiana. And this was the first time that the haunted Dirty South has investigated this site. But I will tell you, in the middle of the day, it still freaked me out. The gem here is the grave of Michael Brown. The story goes that Michael was struck and killed by an unknown motorist when he was only 15. Here's the clincher. After he was buried in, I don't know what the hell this is. His tombstone put in place, a childlike drawing of his death appeared etched in the stone on the back of the grave. And this is one of the creepiest sites we've visited. My heart is still pounding." And that was from the haunted Dirty South. Let's see if I can reach another one. I guess I could see where, you know, people want to believe in shit and do whatever. Let's see if I have one more. That's the same one. Hold on. One more. Good old Halloween story, I guess. Fuck. I erased it. Hold on. This one is, y'all, from the Revelé, which is a newspaper, and it says, "Get spooked. Check out haunted tales surrounding Baton Rouge and Springfield landmarks." It talks about the old state capitol being haunted, the old state penitentiary, the Spanish moon, different guarantee income life and broadcasting building, and all the supposed ghosts. All right, here it is. Springfield Cemetery. "The legend of Michael Brown's tombstone in Springfield Cemetery has since been debunked, but it made for a great ghost story in its heyday. Located in Springfield, Louisiana, the tombstone of Michael Brown developed an etching seemingly overnight, depicting a detailed scene of a road with several cars and people. According to an article from Haunted Places, many believe Brown had been killed in an unsolved hit and run, and this ghost had etched the scene of the crime into the tombstone, leading to the perpetrator's arrest. As noted in the Livingston Parish News article from 2003, shout out to them, y'all. That was the first article I read. The myth has since been disproven by Brown's family, who clarified that the etching was commissioned by the family to put on this tomb, on the tombstone. Brown was an avid fox hunter. I don't know how many foxes there are in Livingston Parish or surrounding areas. I don't know. They probably got that wrong. And the etching is a sketch Brown had drawn of a fox hunt that he had recently been on. Y'all, it could have been a rabbit hunt or something like that. Maybe they had foxes back then. I don't know. So that's just another thing that's kind of freaky, that old school deal that I had forgotten about. But it's Halloween, and I'm up here in Wisconsin, again, hunting with the Lopa. I say kid, he's a young man that received the kidney from this other family that's here. And Halloween, look, up here in Wisconsin, these people be loving it, some Halloween. Everywhere you drive, they got like grand displays of like giant skeletons and, you know, just a lot of Halloween decorations. I don't recall. I mean, some people put out like pumpkins and shit and signs in the yard in Louisiana, but up here they got like really elaborate displays. And Halloween is today. Day that you're getting this, and I don't know, wanted to bring you something different. And the appreciate y'all for listening. And I'm sitting in the basement and freeze my ass off, and about to take a shower and go watch some football. But I'll be headed back to the great state of Louisiana tonight. I'm not watching football. I'm recording this on Sunday, y'all. But I'll be headed back Tuesday night. By the time you hear this recording, I'll probably be on my way back, 16-hour drive. But happy Halloween. Keep your kids safe. Check your candy and shit. And back in my day, the urban legend was that, you know, some kid started eating his candy and it had a razor blade in it and cut his mouth up or whatever. I don't believe that's ever true. Maybe somebody got poisoned. I don't know. Keep your kids safe. Check the candy. Kiddos out there, you listening? I loved Halloween. My favorite part was coming home from trick-or-treating with my brothers and sisters and dumping all your candy on the floor and trading out the shit that you didn't like, you know, and that they liked, and you got the shit that you liked. And so trick-or-treat and love each and every one of y'all. Thank you for tuning in and listening and liking and sharing. And yeah, we got a lot of big shit coming. A lot of big things coming, and just stay tuned. And I appreciate and love each and every one of you. Patreon members, convicts, Apple subscribers. I got something special coming for you. If you want to be a subscriber to Real Life Real Crime, and get the bonus episodes and commercial-free episodes and early releases and all that stuff, you can go to patreon.com, type in Real Life Real Crime, or in the Real Life Real Crime community app. Our subscribers, I call them convicts. I affectionately call them convicts. You can do it there. Or if you are an Apple subscriber, that's the new thing that we have, that you go to listen to Real Life Real Crime through Apple, and you want the bonus stuff and don't want to listen to commercials. And we give some cool stuff, like Cindy sends out like stickers and different things. Just go on there and read about the different tier levels if you want to subscribe. And, you know, we appreciate each and every one of y'all. Hey, you can't be a Patreon or convict or Apple subscriber. I get it. I love each and every one of you just as much, right? And I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't have lifers. We wouldn't have won all the awards and wouldn't have my own TV show coming and all of these different things if you people hadn't supported me these past 6 years. So I love and appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you so much. Have a happy Halloween. And I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life Real Crime, the podcast. And until next time or ever. especially on Halloween. Don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door, you're running's over, that's for sure.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed Issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.